Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Figure It, the podcast where we look at the facts and statistics on Cyprus and figure out what it all means. My name is Fiona Mullen and I'm the Director of Sapienta Economics. This week I have brought Michelle Parlafleet of Reios Partners onto the programme to talk about the panel which she moderated at the Cyprus Forum on the 4th of October called Scenarios on Cyprus Futures. Michelle is a peace-building practitioner and process facilitator who was heavily involved in the Cyprus Futures scenarios in 2022, which we're going to talk about a bit later. But in brief, it's a different way of approaching conflict to the old and tired and failed ways that we've used for Cyprus for the past 50-plus years. We're recording this in the same week that the Greek Cypriot and Turkish Cypriot leaders went to meet the UN Secretary-General in New York, and there are few signs that anything substantive came out of that. So we do need to do things differently. There's a lot of discussion about how we do that, and I'm very glad to have Michelle on the programme.
Many thanks, Fiona, for having me on Figure It. I'm delighted to have the opportunity to engage with you here.
So the Cyprus Forum is a kind of cross between, I find, like an economist conference on economic and political issues. It's a bit like an IMH conference, that's a local business here that runs conferences. And it's a little bit of a Cyprus problem workshop as well. And it's all rolled together across 2 days, across multiple venues. And I do hope that one day they'll do it in such a way that you can see the entire schedule in a single document in the palm of your hand, because I didn't get to go to any of them because it was all happening by the time I realised it was going on. But let's talk about your session, Michelle, on the Friday morning. What were you doing? What were you aiming to achieve? And so on.
Sure. Then I'm really happy to be able to tell you about that right now and others who might not have been able to catch the Cyprus Forum. The session sought to foster reflection and dialogue across different perspectives on Cyprus' complex future and what that means for choices made today. We had 6 distinguished speakers from different backgrounds in terms of profession, age, 3 Greek Cypriots, 3 Turkish Cypriots, who hold different perspectives and who use the Cyprus future scenarios as a frame of reference to consider current trends and developments and speak to challenges and opportunities in Cyprus' future. So overall, the session was meant to contribute to a more nuanced public discourse on the future of the island and to help shape an informed and instructive or constructive policy debate.
Right. So I like to keep these sessions short. So we won't name every single person on the panel because there were a lot of them. But we will put a link to the video recording in the show notes so that you can see who everybody is.
All speakers, it might be useful to mention that all speakers actually participated in their personal capacity and not had worked with these Cyprus future stories before. So that was exciting too, especially also for the Cypriots who had worked on the stories and they were quite chuffed seeing how they served as a conversation starter.
Yeah. So obviously some of the discussion was linked to the Cyprus futures scenarios and that in what do you think were the key takeouts of this session? I'll tell you why I think it's such a difficult subject. We're so used to talking about the past in Cyprus, which I think you'll mention in a moment, but also we are so used to trying to lock onto specific ways of solving the Cyprus problem. Like how many troops, all these very specific issues that we've talked about for years. So what you're trying to do is different. And I think for that reason, it can be difficult for people to get their heads around it. But that's what we're here for. So please let us know what you got out of it or what you think they all got out of it.
Well, that's obviously difficult to speak for others, what they got out of it. But in terms of my major takeaways, I think it was actually surprising to realize that the speakers, despite their different perspectives, seemed much more aligned than I had anticipated in their assessments of the current situation in Cyprus. And they were also much more aligned in what that means for the possible future of the island and its people. Right. And it was interesting to note how many spoke of the status quo often being perceived as static, but that it actually isn't. And that the situation continues to deteriorate, both in terms of relationships on the island but and in mistrust, but also in terms of people's ability to deal with challenges related to climate change, migration, economic growth, or even create conducive environments for youth, whether they're Turkish Cypriot or Greek Cypriot, etc. So for me, it was really a big takeaway from the conversation was also around how different it is indeed to talk about the future of the island and to recognize that the future isn't a given, that it isn't set in stone. There is indeed quite a lot of talk about it will be this way or it will be that way, much more in line of predictions or in terms of what we think it should be or it shouldn't be. But to actually start talking about what it could be and to consider that under different, under a range of conditions and depending on our actions and behaviors, the future might unfold in one or another way. That is actually quite a different thing. And the other thing that struck me from the Cyprus Forum session is around how talking about this future in this kind of more open and exploratory way really takes a bit of practice.
Right.
It was interesting that even in talking about the future, very quickly the conversation moved back to the past. And I kind of joked about it saying, hey, the past and the Cyprus problem almost is a bit of a black hole that sucks up energy in conversation. So it takes some muscle or some practice almost to talk about, to recognize the future is about so much more.
Yes, I think this is the most difficult thing to grasp for people, and no doubt even more difficult to put into practice. It's this idea that this isn't saying this is how the world should be in 2035. It's this is how it could be under various different circumstances, let's say. So we could end up here if this happens. We could end up there if that happens, rather than this is where I think it should be. So yeah, it's difficult for those of us who are used to talking about the Cyprus problem in terms of we should do this and we should do that and the answer is this, etc. So yeah, a different approach.
Yeah, and I think it was also for the Cypriots who were part of this process that really took quite some time and effort to shift out of what it should be or what it will be or what they don't want to see into what it could be. But it really highlights the value of talking about the multiple futures that may lie ahead of Cyprus and that nothing is set in stone. And not all may be equally likely, but all are possible. And the future really depends on our actions and inactions of today, because scenarios are not, and you said that really right, scenarios are not stories of what will happen or what should happen. They're not proposals. They're not predictions. They're really stories about what could happen. And if you do, if you develop those stories with people coming from very different perspectives and reading reality quite different, obviously they have different assessments of what is plausible and what is possible. So a large part of developing these stories is having that kind of conversation under what conditions. So you'll see that actors both on the island and actors outside of the island take very different stances in response to a range of circumstances and their own kind of assessments in these different stories. And that based on that, the future might look quite different from what we had anticipated.
Right. So I think that brings us to the Cyprus future scenarios that you were heavily involved in running back in 2022. I think it took 36 Cypriots from both sides of the island with a wide variety of backgrounds and political viewpoints. Importantly, so it wasn't all peaceniks, let's say, and they had to look at what was going to happen under different scenarios between 2022 and 2035. Is that right?
Yeah. And that actually is a time frame that the group themselves came up with. We asked what time frame is useful, and these kind of scenario processes usually take a bit longer than what is often worked in scenarios. Often you might think of 2 years or 3 years, but here it's really a bit longer as a way of tapping into the imagination and yet still being close enough that you can imagine that your own actions have some influence.
Yes. So you will still be alive when and to see them come to pass. So tell me a bit more about the profile of who was involved.
Sure, you're right. It was indeed 36 Cypriots, 18 Turkish Cypriots, 18 Greek Cypriots, members of religious minorities were included, ages from 20 to late 60s, various professions, educational backgrounds, and personal experiences. And you just mentioned, they weren't all peaceniks. And indeed, many of them were not usual suspects. Mm. Many of them had not been involved in bi-communal activity or any kind of social activism. They were really coming from very different walks of life. There was a primary school teacher, an estate agent, some entrepreneurs, a former investment banker, some academics. Yes, also some activists, a former negotiator, lawyer, a priest, mm-hmm. some civil servants, all participating in their individual capacity, but truly in a way almost constituting a microcosm of the diversity of Cypriot society. And they met in workshops over several months between May and September 2022, and then participated in a what you call a follow-up collective editing process of the stories that took two or three more months. And I think at some point we calculated that every single member of the Cyprus Future Scenarios team spent, I think, at least 15 days of their own time, i.e. voluntarily, working on the scenarios, and many contributed right. much more, and many are still involved. And indeed, the task was to come up with stories of what could happen, not what will happen or what should happen, but what could happen. And in doing so, they were challenged to use four criteria. The stories had to be relevant. So they had to speak to concerns of Cypriots today. So all of them were interviewed. And so that highlighted concerns about prospects for youth, the house prices, inflation, economic development, but also climate change, environmental protection, access to mm-hmm. health, the education, like a whole range of accountability of leadership, lots of different facts. All of those things were meant to be part of the stories. They also had to be challenging the stories in terms of challenging accepted wisdom and making some things that may not be so apparent more visible to people. The stories had to be plausible, logical, and kind of based on empirical evidence, and then clear or distinct from one another.
Right. So not like people land from Mars and solve the Cyprus problem.
No, absolutely not. So there's a difference between plausibility and, how do you call it, almost fantasy land in a way.
Yeah. So you have these four potential scenarios, which, if I remember right, it's no way, my way, their way, and our way. So tell us a bit more about that.
Sure. So the description, and if you see the image, the story icons on the website, www.cyprusfutures.org, you'll see that all four icons actually are plays on road symbols or traffic symbols. So the first story, No Way, is a scenario of stagnation and inaction. And here I'm actually going to refer to how it's described summarily in the report, just to kind of stay as close to the stories that the Cypriots developed as possible. And in a No Way story, in the face of continuous failures of the peace process, divisions between the two main communities in Cyprus steadily deepen and solidify, resulting in the North's gradually increasing dependence on and integration with Turkey, along with increased security concerns in the South and overall militarization of the islands. So here the Cyprus problem gradually deteriorates. The next story is the story that's titled My Way, and that's a scenario of divergence and opposition in which the Cyprus problem escalates rapidly. And here in this world, intent on breaking out of longstanding isolation, Turkish Cypriots no longer hold out for an agreed settlement of the Cyprus problem, and they actively pursue international engagement and recognition as an right. independent state. And they actually do get recognized in this story by a few states, prompting strong resistance from Greek Cypriots and condemnation by international organizations. Hmm. Now, the third story, the story of Their Way, is a scenario of peace under pressure. And here in this world, pressured by external forces and relying on international experts, a federation is established in Cyprus through a top-down process that fails to prepare communities for changes ahead, resulting in a dispensation that reinforces mistrust and ethnic divisions and has little capability to handle stress. So in this story, in this future, the Cyprus problem gets settled on the surface. And the fourth story, which is called the Our Way story, that's a scenario of resilient peace. And in this story, in this future, taking charge of their own future, through a participatory process, the two main communities on the islands acknowledge their interdependence in an evolving context and the economic and social benefits of peace, and become partners in a federation that's resilient and inclusive. Right. And in this future world, the Cyprus problem gets transformed. Now, let me just say that the actual stories contain really interesting details that are drawn from real life, that make visible dynamics that may not be visible or clear to everyone. So I really encourage readers to read the stories instead of relying on my snapshot mini encounter.
Yes, because I see on your website you've got a sort of headline version,
yes,
and then a deeper version, and then an even
exactly.
deeper version. And there are different layers depending on how deep you want to go.
Exactly. And it might be useful to mention that in coming to this set of four, the group of 36 Cypriots discussed many, many more possible futures of Cyprus, some of which definitely represent the desired future for one or more team members. So a lot of time in this process was spent on discussing plausibility. Could that happen? Why do you think so? And in the end, the group as a whole couldn't be convinced that some of these futures that were envisaged could actually happen, considering a whole host of factors and dynamics both on and off the island. So those were discarded. But what I want to highlight is this set of stories is not exhaustive or definitive, and it isn't meant to be. They're really meant as a launchpad for conversation about the future, to highlight that multiple futures are possible, and to engage with one another about the conditions under which one or another future could come about. What kind of actions and choices do we face if we want to steer the future in one direction or really not in another direction? Hmm. So the No Way story, and you probably heard it already when I gave the little snapshot, is quite telling in kind of describing of what could happen when seemingly nothing is happening, when the situation remains stuck as it has been for so long. And there's been little energy and room to tackle day-to-day issues because the Cyprus problem sucks up all attention, yet nobody wants to let go of some kind of peace process, and nobody's willing to really put effort into it either.
Yeah, I watched the video of your session last night, and what struck me was there's a version which says, I suppose it's a version of No Way, which says there's nothing we can do because it's all up to Turkey. And then there were other people saying, well, look, actually, what about our own agency? Are we just going to lie down and expect, let's say, others more powerful than us to change things? Or are we at least going to try and change things ourselves? So what I see these scenarios doing is trying to invite people's imaginations to say, look, you actually have some agency here too. You might be able to influence which scenario we end up in. So I think what was interesting, and especially given what people pointed out in the session, that things are changing all around us. I mean, you can no longer assume that the US has the clout that it's had in the past. Certainly the UN doesn't have the clout. We've already seen that. And so there are things that we just cannot assume anymore about how the various powerful external actors will behave on this island.
Thanks. I really appreciate you sharing these observations. It's actually interesting to note that in the beginning, when we started the process and we interviewed all the people individually, agency or the lack of agency was a repeated pattern, though not necessarily talked about in such terms. But people did indeed refer to, oh, it's all up to Turkey, oh, it's all up to Greece, or it's up to the guarantor states. And as part of, and almost indirectly through the process, by the end, several of those involved actually said, no, this is too important to just leave to politicians. And if we don't take a stance or get more active, then yes, who do we have to blame if things unfold in a certain way? Because actually, it is up to us to take a stance, because only when we do that and really start engaging with one another and explore how we could make this work in a way that takes into consideration the needs and concerns of the diverse people living in Cyprus and considering Cyprus their home, then that also becomes easier to bring that to the outside world. And that's why in these stories, so indeed, like you said, some might say, oh, it's all up to Turkey. But you can see in these stories that Turkey behaves quite differently in these four stories, in the Cyprus future stories. because Turkey in itself is not a static actor either, nor is any of the other players involved in this.
Indeed, yeah. In fact, I recently launched what's called a Cyprus Problem Risk Index, and in preparing it and looking at the historical parts of the model, I could see that Turkey's behaviour towards Cyprus changes quite radically depending on all kinds of different variables, and that has quite a big impact on how stable Cyprus is. So how can we continue to use the Cyprus futures scenarios in a useful way? I say that because it's something that will be very new for Cypriots. And having lived here for over 20 years, I know Greek Cypriots especially, they're kind of conservative by nature. They don't necessarily like new things when it comes to politics or the Cyprus problem. So how do we somehow keep this going?
Well, there are multiple ways in which the scenarios can be used. We've had big plans, and I can speak to that. But just to let you know, I mentioned the website, and let me mention it again, www.cyprusfutures.org. It contains actually a whole bunch of tools for using the scenarios. So it includes the stories, a comparative overview, but also a slideshow that anybody can use, and importantly, a how to use the scenarios guide with questions and worksheets for using the scenarios, for example, in educational settings or for strategic planning. So if you're, for example, a business owner, you can use these scenarios to almost do a stress testing of your own strategy, your own business plan. How resilient are we as a business if this or another future were to come about? What are the implications? So you can use them to prompt discussion in your church, in your company, in your family, in your organization or a municipality. And because scenarios never come alone, they allow you to be in conversation with people you don't necessarily agree with, because it really allows you to think, or it really challenges you to think, under what conditions could this or another future happen? And what are the implications for me? And what choices and decisions would I face? Now, in terms of what we are hoping to do is to really make these scenarios available to a range of Cypriot actors, civil society organizations, the chambers of commerce, political parties, municipalities, local authorities, for kind of broader civic engagement, but also facilitate workshops with specific audiences or specific themes. Like, you could use the scenarios to almost harvest what are some of the dilemmas or the choices or the issues that may come up in relation, for example, to the environment or to the economy. And then there are ways in which you can use the scenarios to start exerting influence or create spin-off projects. We are aware of examples in other contexts where, for example, there has been a business lab or a social lab relating to education. And of course, all of that can only be possible if there's some kind of institutional capacity to take this forward. So far, and if you allow me, Fiona, so far we haven't been able to raise funds for this follow-on phase. And if anybody listening in is interested in supporting this effort and making this available to many more Cypriots, please be in touch through the website. Because this really, we have a sense that it really does indeed create something else and a different way of engaging. And of course, it doesn't need to be just these four stories, but the stories are a springboard.
Yes, I think even just the idea of starting with scenarios rather than, you know, the solution is X, it's just a really useful way to approach it in the first place. Because, you know, as some people will know, my latest hobby horse is that we really need to democratize the peace process. And I've been working with the Cyprus Peace and Dialogue Center on trying to see, not even should we have a citizens' assembly to solve the Cyprus problem, but maybe we just need a citizens' assembly to find out how we want to run the peace process. Or maybe we need a citizens' assembly to do these kinds of scenarios that you're talking about. So it's a really interesting way of looking at it.
One thing that struck me in being in Cyprus this time is around how often people speak about, oh, so-and-so is pro-solution or anti-solution. And I was thinking, as if pro-solution can only look like one thing. But by focusing so much on the solution and on the possible outcome, but not necessarily considering how the road there may make one or another outcome more or less sustainable or legitimate, that's relatively little given attention.
Yeah. So, and that's what's interesting about your third scenario, the their way scenario. That could be read as one imposed by the big outside powers because they need the Cyprus problem fixed. And I think we shouldn't dismiss that as a risk, actually, given that the region around us is on fire and we might suddenly suit, it might suddenly suit very big Western powers, and I don't mean Turkey, to say, right, we need a two-state solution or something like that.
And it might be worth mentioning, when we did a bunch of press briefings last year when the Cyprus Future stories became public, some people said and still say, so what's so wrong with peace under pressure? Surely it can't be that wrong. But then actually, when you engage in conversation about what might be some of the potential ramifications of peace under pressure, of a very leadership-oriented process behind closed doors, where rumors and speculation in media is continuing, where mistrust is still being fed, where there's very little preparation of people on the ground or very little thinking through what are the problems that we can foresee, how are we going to deal with one or the other issues, or how will we deal with tension when it arises in the leadership? Then you start, only when you really start thinking that through and start thinking through beyond the headline, a settlement has been reached, then you start thinking, hey, actually, what do we need to put in place and how do we need to build conditions that are conducive for something that is more sustainable and more legitimate and more widely owned by people on the island, and that actually generally addresses the fears that exist on both sides, but also allows people to tap into the imagination of what is possible. And it's been striking for me, I've been reminded by the work of, say, two that are psychologists or economists that won the Nobel Peace Prize, I believe, Tversky and Kahneman, who work on cognitive biases. And they highlight how one of the cognitive biases that's often present for people is that people tend to be much more concerned with what they can lose in the short term than what they can gain in the long term, because the latter is much more abstract, whereas the potential loss in the short term is very concrete. And I've been wondering whether that's partly at play in this context, as it can be in some other context. But that contrast that you show between the their way story and the our way story is really quite telling. And some of the speakers at the Cyprus Forum session actually said, hey, we've tried the peace under pressure. We've tried the leadership, non-transparent, elite talks, just focus on the hardcore political issues and see where that ended us up. Perhaps at what point do we actually recognize that approach doesn't work? And I would say that in this day and age, where there is so much more pressure for accountability, for active citizen engagement, I would imagine, and you can see it in the mediation field, there's much more emphasis and awareness of the importance of inclusion, broader public inclusion.
Yes, and it's almost more difficult in Cyprus, I think, because it's a European Union country. So what I find, especially with Greek Cypriots, they're very sensitive about being told what to do by the foreigners, let's say, especially the foreigners who normally would advise, let's say, less developed countries. So it's really difficult to say, you need to do this because it's the modern way of doing it. They often just turn around and say, no, we're going to do it the way we want to. So anyway, we are running out of our scheduled time, so let's bring this to a close. You heard Michela's appeal. This is where I think the international community really does need to be focusing its attention on how do we change the process to actually get a successful result this time. So go have a look at cyprusfutures.org to see how the scenarios work. We'll also put the link in the show notes. Thank you very much, Michela, for coming and spending your time and explaining how the process works. Figure It is brought to you by Island Talks, the only trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. It does cost money to run things, like software to record things and so on. So if you want to help us out, go to islandtalks.fm and press support us.
Thanks very much, Fiona.
Thank you.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.